Much has been said over the past few months regarding the question of the Anisakis worms in fish, including many rumors that have been circulated that are based on misinformation. So I would like to discuss this question starting from the beginning and discuss why we believe that there is no question that Anisakis worms, when found in the flesh of the fish, are permitted. Most of what I will say is printed in a tshuva from Rav Yisrael Belsky, Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas, and a halachic posik for the OU, and available upon request from the OU. We are accustomed to thinking of worms as something that is, of course, not kosher. The fact that worms have a grotesque appearance only helps to cement in our minds that, of course, the Torah would aser, would forbid, worms. After all, who would ever intentionally dream of eating a worm? Because worms are so slimy and disgusting-looking, we instinctively have a difficult time coming to grasp with the fact that there actually is such a thing as a kosher worm. For example, the Gemara Chulin teaches us that fish worms are permitted. In truth, the Gemara differentiates between two types of worms that inhabit fish. The Gemara has two names for the worms inside of fish, and they are divided by the location in which they are found. All the varieties of worms found in the flesh of the fish are referred to by the Gemara as Darni Dekavri, which literally means fish worms, and the Gemara teaches us that these worms are actually kosher. All the worms found in the gills, intestines, abdominal organs of the fish are called Kukiani, and these worms are absolutely forbidden. The Gemara gives us only one criterion for differentiating between these two types of worms, and that is their location. Those worms found in the flesh of the fish are automatically assumed to be kosher, and those worms found in the abdominal organs of the fish are automatically assumed to be not kosher. What is the difference between these two categories of worms? Why are the worms found in the flesh of the fish permitted, while the worms found in the intestines, gills, and other organs not kosher? To understand this, we have to understand what makes a worm not kosher. It is not unkosher because it looks slimy, or because one has no interest in eating it. It is not kosher because it is either a sheretz ha'aretz, a sheretz ha'mayim, or a sheretz ha'of. This means it either crawls on the ground, it swims in the sea, or it flies in the air. If a worm performs, at some point in its life, one of these three activities, then it becomes completely forbidden. If it has not as of yet performed one of these three activities, then it is permitted. It does not matter what species it belongs to, or how many legs it has, or how repulsive it looks. The criteria of the Torah are quite clear. If it crawls on the ground, swam in the sea, or flew in the air, then it is a sheretz and is not kosher. Otherwise, it never became non-kosher. So, if a worm grows and moves in a place that is none of the above, such as in the flesh of a fish, then it is technically kosher. I say technically kosher because one may not eat these worms if they are noticeable on the fish because of a separate prohibition called Bal Tishaksu, which forbids doing or eating disgusting things. Therefore, one may only eat the worms if they are mixed up with the food. One of the rabbis of the Talmud asked his mother to deliberately mix these worms into his food so that he could eat them. The worms are permitted, just they need to be mixed into the food, and there is certainly no requirement to search after these worms and remove them. We can now understand why some of the worms in the fish are permitted and some are forbidden. The worms that swim in the sea are forbidden. These worms forage around looking for food. Some of these worms will enter into a fish while looking for food. They can be found in the intestines and gills or other organs of the fish, but they are forbidden because they already were rochesh. They moved in the sea and became usser. These worms can be found swimming freely in the sea, and they could also be found inside the fish. Therefore, these worms are forbidden. The fact that it enters into the fish does not make it mutter. However, the worms that are found in the flesh of the fish are permitted, because these worms never swam in the sea. This type of worm is a parasite. It spends its whole life in the inside of a fish, and it is never rochesh in the sea. Although these worms might move around inside the fish, they remain mutter, since the inside of a fish is not one of the places where rechisha makes a worm usser. This type of worm will never be found swimming in the open sea. It is only found inside the fish. So basically, we could divide all worms inside of the fish into two categories. Those worms that swam in the sea are forbidden, and those that did not are permitted. Now, how does it happen that parasites get into fish if the parasites were never in the sea? The Gemara tells us that they are minei kegavli, which literally means that they are formed inside the fish. This would seem to imply that fish worms are somehow spontaneously generated inside of the fish. For if they were created outside of the fish, they should become usur. However, science teaches that fish do not produce worms, but rather all worms follow some form of a life cycle, and only worms can give birth to worms. But if each worm began its life outside of the fish, then it should be forbidden. And yet the Gemara teaches us that all worms found in the flesh of the fish are permitted because they were never rochesh in the water. How do we reconcile the seeming contradiction? Now, this is by no means a new question. Already over 35 years ago, this question was brought to and discussed by Gedolim all over the world, and many tshuvas, responsa, were written to explain why the worms that are found inside the flesh of the fish are permitted. It is well known that Hagaon Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal was asked this question, and that without even offering an answer, he dismissed the question by saying that one cannot argue on an explicit halacha brought in Shulchan Aruch. He is referring to the halacha brought in Shulchan Aruch that all worms found in the flesh of fish are permitted, period, without any further qualifications. This, of course, is based on the Gemara Chulin we mentioned before, that our understanding of the science of how these worms enter the flesh of the fish is not in consonance with our understanding of the Gemara simply means that we must think more creatively and come up with an explanation. But it does not in any way change the halacha. If we find an explanation that we are satisfied with, then great. But if we can't, the halacha remains unchanged. The worms in the flesh of the fish remain mutter. Some poskim at the time posited that the worms must enter the fish when they are too small to be seen, so that they give the appearance of being created by the fish. Since they are invisible in the sea and only become visible inside of the fish, they are considered to have never swam in the sea and are therefore permitted. Others questioned whether we can ever truly prove whether these worms are or are not created by the fish, just as the Pashat reading of the Gemara implies, and since this point is technically impossible to prove, one has the right to follow the Psak of the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch. But whatever the explanation, or lack thereof, the accepted Psak for the past 35 years has been that worms in the flesh of fish remain kosher. Almost all the poskim at the time agreed with Rav Moshe that the worms were mutter, and this continued to be the accepted practice. It should be noted that though the question was new, the worms themselves were not new. These same fish, these same worms, have been known of for hundreds of years and have been eaten in every Jewish community the world over. So when the poskim permitted these worms, they were simply continuing a thousands of year tradition that dates back to the Gemara. The fish and worms were the same. All that was different was the question. In such matters, the tradition is a very strong factor, and to uproot such a tradition would require solid halachic ground, and in this case that simply did not exist. All the earlier commentators say that worms found in the flesh of fish are categorically permitted. Recently, the question has again resurfaced. Some people have seen worms migrating from the abdominal cavity of the fish into the flesh portion of the fish after the fish was caught and sliced open. They therefore posited that all the worms enter the flesh of the fish after the fish dies. Since we noted before that worms found in the intestines and abdominal organs are usur, they are now faced with a paradoxical situation. The worms in the stomach we know are usur. If we watch it migrate into the flesh, and it must remain usur, and yet we know from Shulchan Aruch that all worms found in the flesh of the fish are permitted. This is obviously an impossible contradiction, and they feel compelled to conclude that all the worms in the flesh of the fish are usur. Though this contradicts the teachings of the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, they feel that seeing is believing and are compelled to be machmir, stringent, because they can't explain this seeming paradox. Certainly, a forbidden worm does not become permitted simply by entering into the flesh. If we understand that every worm follows the path that they observed, then they all must be forbidden. Though this is exactly the type of reasoning that Rav Moshe Feinstein and others tried to stop, for some reason in today's climate, this question has exploded. I would think to attribute this to the widespread use of internet and blogs as the source of news and facts in the Torah community. We have turned halachic dialogues into spectator sport, with every havamina, initial thought, published as though they were rigorous maskanos, conclusions, and world opinion becomes the arbiter of halacha instead of talmidei chachamim. But be that as it may, for whatever reason, in this life cycle of the Tummel, which seems to repeat about every 10 years or so, the Olam became unsatisfied with accepting Rav Moshe's psak that we cannot throw out Shulchan Aruch and letting the question go. They demanded an explanation. To say that the worms must enter the flesh of the fish when they are too small to be seen was no longer acceptable, since people have clearly seen visible worms entering into the flesh. It should be noted that those that gave that answer never meant to say that this was the only answer, and if it was shown that the worms are larger, that is a problem. They simply were offering what this, at the time seemed the most plausible solution. But they had no intention of implying that one may argue with the psak of Shulchan Aruch, which is an explicit Gemara. The question began a life of its own, and individuals began compiling lists and publicizing that almost every known species of wild fish are usur because they all contain worms, which to the uninitiated sounds like a terrible travesty. But in reality, this was always known and had been dismissed time and time again. The lists would grow from week to week, as though new information was being uncovered that showed that more and more fish have recently been discovered to contain worms, as though this was some new findings. What they should have reported is that we have always known that these fish contain worms, and Shulchan Aruch says that they are mutter, but we no longer follow this halacha, and therefore they are all usur. But in regards to answering the question, it should be noted that there are actually several approaches taken to answer this question by different gedolim. Some have suggested that perhaps a confused worm did enter the flesh after death, but this is a yotzei min haklal, an exception to the rule. That one worm that was observed acting in a strange manner should be removed and discarded, but we can still accept that all the other worms are permitted, because they behaved exactly as Chazal has told us. There are always exceptions to rules, but we are not mechuyev, obligated, to concern ourselves with those exceptional cases. In general, when one purchases a fish, there is no need to check for worms, because we can assume that any worm that one would find inside the flesh are the halachically permitted type, since those are the supermajority. We don't throw out thousands of years of tradition because of a few mixed-up worms. This is one approach taken by some poskim, but I would like to primarily focus on a different approach, which is taken by Rav Yisrael Balsky Shlita. He assumes that it is correct to say that the worms that are found inside of the flesh of the fish follow a life cycle that began outside of the fish. In fact, all worms, including the worms discussed by Chazal, all have had a life cycle that begins outside the fish. If one studies the life cycle of the Anisakis worm, which is one such parasite that is commonly found in the flesh of fish, one will find that it follows the following cycle. The mature worms live in the intestines of sea mammals, such as dolphins and seals, where they lay their eggs. These eggs are excreted with the feces of these animals into the sea. The eggs are microscopic, and the eggs hatch into microscopic larvae. These larvae, like all parasites, need a host in order to develop. The lucky ones are eaten by krill and shrimp and other tiny sea creatures, and the Anisakis begin to develop inside of their host. They first become visible to the naked eye inside of the host. They will never be seen floating in the sea because they are microscopic at that stage. From the point when they are swallowed, they will remain the rest of their life inside of various fish. The small fish get eaten by larger fish, and the host for these parasites will change several times during the life cycle of the worm. While the digestive juices of the fish will have no effect on the worm, and the worm eventually will find its way into the intestines, and then they burrow into the flesh of the larger fish, such as salmon or herring. In fact, Anisakis worm is so prevalent in herring that another name for the Anisakis nematode is the herring worm, which has been known about and studied by scientists for hundreds of years. In fact, it is believed that scientists have known of this worm for over 700 years, and Sefarim written 200 years ago discuss herring and the worms found inside of it. However, some have spread rumors that the Anisakis is a new worm that has only recently began to infest fish and was unknown of in the times of the Talmud and the Shulchan Aruch. They based this hypothesis on a study conducted in the 1970s that showed that the Anisakis population in fish had increased about fivefold in the past 25 years. They conjectured that if in 25 years it increased five times, then in the past 500 years, since Shulchan Aruch was written, it must have increased thousands of times. what was at one time an unheard-of worm has today become the most prevalent parasite in the flesh of the fish. And this caused some to suspect that the Anisakis is some new worm that behaves differently than all other flesh worms. And when Chazal permitted all flesh worms, it is because they were unaware of this worm. All other worms are formed inside of the fish, except for this one worm, which did not exist or was unknown of in the times of Chazal. Now, there are many problems with this hypothesis, aside from it not being grounded in any facts. It also ignores the fact that this worm has been known of for 700 years at least, far from being an unknown, recently discovered worm. Also, it ignores an even more recent study that shows in the past 25 years a follow-up study was conducted that shows that the population of Anisakis declined back down, and it is more probable that the population follows a cyclical pattern of increasing and decreasing. It also ignores the fact that the Anisakis worm does not behave differently than any other worm. It behaves like all other worms do. It follows a life cycle, as do all worms, and we have yet to find a single worm that does not have a life cycle, but rather is created inside of the fish. Now that we understand the life cycle, we can understand why these worms, and indeed all parasites that are found in the flesh, are permitted. To the naked eye, it would appear as though these worms first come into existence inside of a host. Therefore, Chazal referred to this type of worm as minei kagavli, which means they're formed by a fish. Inside of a fish, as we have stated earlier, is a place where richush, the movement, will not make the worm forbidden. So the worms that develop inside of the krill do not become a sheretz hamayim and are permitted. Now, some have questioned that although the worm is not a sheretz, it should still be usur, since it appears to be created by the krill. We should evoke the rule, kol hayotze min hatomei tomei. All the byproducts of a non-kosher animal are likewise non-kosher. So we should view the worms in the shrimp as miniature shrimp, and they should still be not kosher. The answer to this is that there is a second rule that teaches us that tzir of non-kosher fish is not prohibited by the Torah. It is only asur midrabbanan. Tzir refers to the juices of the fish. The Chavos Das proves from Tosos that these worms are not created by the flesh, since if one dissects an animal that contains worms, they will not find missing parts from the flesh, but rather the worms develop from the juices. This is what we would expect as well from a parasite. It attaches itself to the fish and sucks out the juices, the tzir, and in this way appears to come into being. The Chavos Das says that these worms are a yotze of the tzir and not a yotze of the basar. They are a byproduct of the juices and not of the meat. Therefore, the halacha kol hayotze min hatomei tomei does not apply to these worms, since they emanate from the tzir, which is not a davar tomei. When the worms are consumed by kosher fish and find their way into the intestines of the kosher fish, the worms in reality are kosher. Although we mentioned earlier that one may not eat worms found in the intestines because they are assumed to be non-kosher, in truth the Beis Yosef and the Prima Gaudim explain that this prohibition is because of a doubt. We don't know which type of worm in the stomach is the type that swam in the sea and which type is the minei kagavli, appears to have been created by the fish. Because of uncertainty, we assur every worm that is found in the intestines. However, in truth, there could be many kosher worms in the intestines. But since this pertains to a suffik d'oraisa, we are required to be machmir misuffik, to abstain due to the uncertainty in a biblical prohibition. We are afraid that one will not know how to properly identify and differentiate between the free-swimming worms, which are non-kosher, and the parasites that first appear inside the fish, which are kosher. So we forbid all the worms when found in the intestines. However, once the worm enters into the flesh, this is a 100% proof that this is a kosher worm, because only the parasitic worms enter the flesh. The free-swimming worms never enter into the flesh. So what we started off with as a seeming paradox is really not a paradox at all. True, people have seen worms entering into the flesh of the fish from the abdominal cavity, but the worms that they observed were actually kosher worms. These worms were never usur. They were not usur worms that mysteriously became kosher, but rather they were never usur to begin with. They were simply Minei Kagavli worms following the pattern of their life cycle. This answers another question as well. Some have asked that granted the worms originate in the krill and are not forbidden, but perhaps they should become usur when they migrate from one fish to another fish. There is actually a related discussion about this with worms that migrate from one date into another, and the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. If so, we should say that migrating from one fish to another should be the same, and we should have to invoke the rule, Safek Daraisa L'Chumra, that when we have a doubt relating to a biblical prohibition, we should have to go L'Chumra, and we should have to say that the worms found inside the fish are perhaps prohibited. But, as we just explained, because this is the life cycle of the worm, we have a rule, Hainu Revise, when something is the normal life activity of an animal, that is not considered an out of the normal richush, it is considered what we would expect, then it is not considered it went from one living thing into another, but rather it is a continuation of its life cycle trip. Because of the rule of Hainu Revise, we do not view this as going from one date into another, like that example, but rather it is considered like it stayed within the fish, and the richush inside of one fish does not make it usur. With this approach, we can now understand why, although much of the fish population is infested with these anisakis and other parasites, they are all permitted. Thank you for listening to this edition of OU Kosher Radio.